You may proceed.
Thank you. Personally, I think Ms. Reeves was a little too quick with that, but I'll go ahead. I want to point out that one of the things that has been discussed here a lot is the SHIP case. And I think SHIP is very interesting, and I think it needs to be read very closely. SHIP is not nearly as broad as what people are contending it is. The holding from here, this is reading directly from SHIP. If a claimant has multiple injuries to a major extremity at various levels, it may be appropriate, depending on the facts and circumstances, to rate the percentage of disability to the given entire major extremity. They didn't even say every time you have a major extremity, you get to add it all together. It says may be appropriate depending on the facts and circumstances. Now, what also is interesting in SHIP, there were other pre-existings that were not, you know, SHIP is mostly about whether or not we're going to say that, you know, a 15% here and a 30% up here, I'm sorry, a 10% up here equal something that meets thresholds to the arm. There were other pre-existings which were not included at all, including a rating of 20% to the body as a whole for hypertension, 15% to the body as a whole for chest wall syndrome. Both of those were rated individually and not included in as meeting the threshold. So it's very interesting to look at those cases as well. We had depression that was considered, and then the right arm, 15% at the shoulder that ended up being considered. But there were other pre-existings there that were thrown out because they were determined not to meet the thresholds.
To reach the decision that you want the court to reach, does SHIP have to be overruled?
No.
Just distinguished?
Just distinguished, absolutely. And I don't even think you have to work hard to distinguish it, because we're not dealing with, I'm not sure if any of these cases, I'm sorry, I've got four in my brain, but I don't know that any of these cases are dealing with an extremity where you have more than one injury to an extremity that you should add together. I don't
think
it's applicable.
So you think SHIP was correct? If you have one extremity, you can stack the
different. I do, absolutely. I've been doing this almost 20 years, and I have no problem with that, because your wrist is clearly part of your elbow, is part of your arm. I mean, when you're looking at, you look at what was this person's extremity, their major extremity, their arm, what disability did they have to that at the time of the last injury? If they had a 10% down here at their wrist, which would be 17 and a half weeks, and they had a 10% up here to their shoulder, which would be 23.2 weeks, I have no problem saying that their entire arm has 23.2 plus 17.5. That's their disability to this major extremity. The 175 is part of the level here, is part of the level here, is part of the level here. You know that because if you were to have the unfortunate event of having your complete arm severed at the shoulder, you get 232 weeks plus the 10% premium. You don't get 175, 210, 220 and 235, almost 1,000 weeks for the loss of your arm. You don't, because the 175 is included up here. So that it makes sense to me that you can add those, that we're looking at what was the state of your right arm at the time of your last injury. It does not make sense to me that you can include a 5% to this hand and 10% to this hand and say, somehow I meet thresholds. You don't, because you don't have a 15% to any one major extremity. That's the difference here. It doesn't make sense to me that you can add a spastic colon to depression and say, "Ooh, we've met the 50 weeks to the body as a whole." Those are distinct and different things.
But what if there was medical testimony that those two conditions were connected?
Then I would probably say there could be some reason to do that. If there's medical testimony that tells me depression and spastic colon are so intertwined that it's actually one injury, I would say that's reasonable. And I would say in Mr. Tuorte's, and not to get away from Mr. Christensen, but, you know, when she was saying someone who has a low back injury of 10%, 9%, and 11%, I have no problem paying that person either. I think at the time of the last injury, their low back, their body as a whole injury to their low back is whatever those things add up to, and I can't do that math that quick. But it's when you get disparaging things that you can't stack them. And I don't think SHIP says that you can. It just doesn't. It talks about one major extremity, and again, it only says depending on facts and circumstances. So I don't think you have to overrule SHIP. I think SHIP is consistent with what's been done. Totally. I wanted to point out too, you know, the question of what is de minimis, I think the legislature, by putting in these thresholds, defined what they meant by that. I've been doing this long enough that I started practicing and representing the Second Injury Fund before the 93 changes came into effect. I was telling Rochelle last night that when they first came into effect, we had files, of course, that they didn't apply to, more files they didn't apply to than they did, and we actually had a stamped. Statutory thresholds apply because it was a big change. Because before the statutory thresholds came into effect, we actually said if you got 10% to the body as a whole, we'll assume there's a combination, we'll pay you, we would settle based on 10. I remember people complaining about that. I remember my chief counsel then, Maria Campbell, saying, well, wait till the statutory thresholds go into effect. It's going to be 12 and a half. So I think that by putting in those thresholds that the court or that the legislature was telling us, this is what we mean by de minimis. Anything that's less than 15% to a major extremity doesn't qualify. Because remember, that hindrance or obstacle and then the numerical thresholds, it's an or. I'm sorry, it's an and. It has to be a hindrance or obstacle and it has to meet these thresholds. So the fact that it's merely a hindrance or obstacle doesn't mean that it's not de minimis. As Ms. Atuarte says, I know of no case law or no reasoning that supports her opinion on that. It's and. You have to prove hindrance or obstacle, and you have to prove that it's a numerical threshold. The same could be true if you've got somebody who meets the numerical threshold, but they say, I got no problems at all, it never affected my work. I don't think that qualifies, because you have to meet both of them. In Mr. Berlinger's case, the only real difference here, what's interesting in this case, there's two things, first of all, but we're talking now about compensable injury because Mr. Berlinger, we're not talking about pre-existings. In his case, we have the last injury is what we're wondering if everything should be included because he had an incident where he was driving a skid loader and bounced around, maybe got bucked off, I'm not positive. Anyway, hit his head, had a concussion, injured his neck, and had some left elbow problems. Ended up settling with the employer for that for 17.5% to the body as a whole for his neck, 5% to the body as a whole for his concussion, and 5% to the elbow for the elbow injury. And what we're saying here and what the Court of Appeals has said here is that those 5% body as a whole concussion and 5% to the left elbow should not be considered. He got benefits as well based upon his combination of the 27.5% body as a whole to the neck for the compensable injury and his pre-existing 17.5% to his ankle. So that's the kind of nuance in this case. There's one other one that I would be remiss not to point out. The ALJ in this case awarded benefits based on the 5% concussion and the 5% elbow, and we're the one that appealed to the commission, and the commission affirmed. So this is not a case where the commission went rogue. It's a case where the administrative law judge made that decision. I don't know why the administrative law judge did that. There's no reasoning in his opinion as to why he decided to include those, but we would submit they're wrong, and the Eastern District Court of Appeals has agreed. But it is slightly different there. I think what I would just ask that the court look at, there's two things going on here, and it's first of all this decision on how you apply the numerical thresholds, and the fact that the commission has now said that the 15%, they say the 15% only applies if you only have one pre-existing and it's to a major extremity. So they would say 15% doesn't apply if you've got 5% to this hand and 5% to this hand. They'd say, no, doesn't apply because you have more than one pre-existing, so we're going to go to that 50 weeks. There's no basis for that at all. And then you get to the problem of when they get to that 50 weeks, arguing that you can start adding everything together. You can add some things together. We've talked about that. SHIP allows extremities. I think there are circumstances where body's a whole, but you simply can't add everything together. And I don't believe that you can add, in Mr. Berlinger's case, the concussion and the right elbow, which is what they've done, into that whole figure on the 50 weeks. So, again, I would submit to you that the commission here was incorrect in its holding and adding in the 5% for the concussion, the 5% to the elbow, and the Eastern District's reasoning should be followed. Thank you.
You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Dean Christensen. I represent Eric Buehlinger in his workers' compensation claim. What I'd like to do is to answer a couple of questions that have been raised here earlier this morning before I proceed with my argument. I won't take them in any particular order unless if you so desire. The amusement ride was brought up that if you don't reach a certain height, then it doesn't mean all the kids can come in if only one reaches a certain height. Well, I've raised four kids myself, and I've been to many amusement rides. I've been to many swimming pools. And there's just as many signs that say The kids don't come in here unless a parent comes in. Now, a parent comes into the swimming pool, into the deep end, and guess what? All the kids get to come in then. So, you know, this analogy, it's not some super analogy that, oh, yeah, that's right. If one's only 48 inches, they don't all come in. Okay, that isn't something to me that blows these cases out of the water. It's a cute little analogy, but that's all it is. Now, the other question is a finger a major extremity? It's not. Okay? Let's not mess around with that. A finger is not a major extremity. The reason why, if you have a particularly bad finger injury or multiple finger injuries, the reason why those get added up into a hand injury is because, guess what? Those fingers are part of your grip. Those fingers are part of what allows you to perform various activities with your whole hand. And so injuries to a finger, a bad one, or two fingers, which actually affect the larger extremity, are not actually finger injuries. They're something that affects the entire upper extremity. There was a question of, I'm not sure I completely understood, completely got the question as to whether or not I can think of any cases where two injuries go to the body as a whole. Maybe you were asking if they were two body as a whole injuries, but there's definitely cases where a person has had two leg injuries, and they said, you know what, we're just going to the body on that. The case I'm thinking of, I don't have the site, it's Dauster, D-A-U-S-T-E-R, versus Star, S-T-A-R, Manufacturing. It's old. I think it's in the 30s. A man had two leg injuries, and they said, you know what? This so affects the body. We're just going to the body as a whole on this, even though they're just extremity injuries. We're going to the body as a whole. Dauster versus Star. There's a question, and this is kind of a biggie. It was asked, is the decision of the commission contrary to its past interpretations? And the answer to that is no. And guess what? Back in 2004, a year after SHIP came out, actually months after SHIP came out, and if you do a search, a computer search under the Industrial Commission decisions, you will come up with this case. James Frank versus Sure Shine Incorporated, decided by the Industrial Commission on November 8th of 2004. Here's what's important. First of all, three entirely different commissioners. So we don't have this rogue commission that decided these four cases and this rogue commission went crazy. Back in 2004, we got three entirely different commissioners. And here's what happens there. You had a 7% of the body from a low back injury. You had a 15% of the neck. The second injury fund attorneys, the Attorney General's office, says you can't bring that 7% of the low back in. You can't combine 7% and 15% to get 22% and then apply that against the fund. But that commission said that same argument was advanced by the fund in the case of SHIP versus Treasurer. In that case, the fund argued that the stacking of disabilities to reach a cumulative total existing prior to the prior injury. This argument was rejected. Accordingly, we find the ALJ should have considered both the 7% and the 15%. Now, is that some sort of precedent that controls all these cases? No, it's a commission decision. But it goes to the fact of these four cases aren't the first time this has come up. It was done in 2004. Here's how I have been taking a look at this case, and I hope
you do agree, though, that there needs to be some consistency.
There
in
definitely
these cases,
needs to
and
be.
The time has come for this court to resolve the issue one way or the other.
Attorneys crave consistency; it drives us crazy. These are not huge cases. It does our clients no good to wait this long for their money, and it does attorneys no good to spend all their time on cases of this size.
But they're huge cases for the clients.
They are huge for the clients. Not so much for some clients as for others, but they do set a precedent. And it's because some are bigger than others, that I hope Mr. Salisbury will excuse me, but I would like to use his case because I think the facts in his case give a particularly good analysis here. I think he hit on it. Number one, what's the purpose of the fund? Okay, we've been focusing down and nitpicking section 220 here, subsection 220, and saying what is meant here. The purpose here of the second injury fund is to help get people employed, handicapped persons employed. That's the umbrella purpose here. Whether it be...
But legislature, after World War II, we had a bunch of soldiers come home or disabled and we wanted to get them employed, so the second injury fund would help. Then they changed the purpose, didn't they, in 2005 when they changed it from liberal interpretation to strict construction. The legislature could change the purpose, I guess, because we have the same situation now. We have soldiers coming home. And we also have workers too, but the purpose originally was for the soldiers to be employed.
Well, Judge, as far as the strict construction is concerned, this court frequently cites to the Treatise of Sutherland's when it deals with statutory construction. And if the court goes back and reads Sutherland's, you will see that there's...
Liberal construction, at one point, it was supposed to be commissioners were supposed to find in favor of the workers and then towards the workers by construction, but now they changed that to say, no, you don't do that.
Well, they said that you don't weigh it in anyone's favor, okay? But the question is, does strict construction change what the legislative intent was? Because when it comes down to liberal construction, strict construction, whatever construction, what this court is supposed to do is to figure out what the folks across the street here were doing. What was their intent in passing this law? Their intent was to encourage, was to eliminate any discouragement of hiring disabled persons. And so that was their intent. That's why the witty majority came out and they said we'd be remiss if we failed to observe our interpretation is counterintuitive to and inconsistent with the whole purpose and intent of the Second Injury Fund. So the lower court here, the Eastern District, said what we're doing here in reversing the commission is completely against legislative intent.
So tell me how you interpret the legislature's imposition of strict construction.
As I have studied strict construction, I think that strict construction in a setting like this is worthless. I think strict construction, when you've got a time limitation, when you've got a dollar limitation, when you've got some hard objective a line to draw, is worthwhile. When you apply strict construction to a situation of, is this person employable in the workplace? What does that, I don't see how that applies.
One way to interpret it would be if the statute is ambiguous, previously one would have liberally construed it in favor of compensation. And the question is, does strict construction mean then you no longer liberally construe the statute in favor of compensation when it's ambiguous?
Well, it means you don't give an unfair advantage to everybody. It doesn't mean you don't rule in favor of compensation. You don't give an unfair advantage to anybody. But strict construction still means legislative intent.
Mr. Christensen.
And here's the other thing. Here's my point. Now, even the legislature, what they do, and the question was raised before, can't the legislature do whatever they want in this sort of situation? So long as it doesn't create a constitutional infirmity, they can. Okay, think of Mr. Witte's case. He's got 10% diabetes, he's got 10% gastro, he's got 10% psych, he's got 10% of a thigh, and he's got 5% of a low back. What's that? Basically adds up to 40% of a body. Okay, so let's suppose we got a guy that's had 4 operations on his back with rods, screws, and plates in his back, all on the lower back, and he's got 40% of the back. So if you overrule the commission, you're saying that,
hey, that guy that walks in with 40% in his lower back, he gets fund benefits. But Mr. Witte, he's got 40% disability too. He gets no, he gets no fund benefits. Why? Because one guy is limited down to the lower back, whereas his are the body as a whole. And let me tell you this. A couple of things about the body as a whole. First of all, take a look at Section 220. It talks about two different things in there. We have intermixed here injuries. It says injuries, and then it says disabilities. Injuries and disabilities are different things. An injury is a physical thing. A disability is how does your injury cause you to function in the workplace. Now, Missouri does not follow the American Medical Association methods of rating disability. But here's how the American Medical Association, in their guides to impairments, this is the underlying theory, the underlying theology in the AMA guidelines to impairment. I quote, "The guides continues to espouse the principles that all impairments affect the individual as a whole." All impairments affect the individual as a whole. I am not standing here saying that we need to put wrist injuries and put them on the body of the whole. That's how they do it. I'm not saying we need to all of a sudden shift into the AMA. What I am asking is that you realize that when a person has a body as a whole injury, how that then becomes disability and affects how they work out there and get jobs in the marketplace is a different thing. So try not to look at this person, Mr. Witte, as being just a person with injuries here, here, and here. Look at him as an entity, and how does this entity, that is disability, affect him in going out and securing this job and showing up day after day, week after week? It's a matter of disability. It's not a matter of separate injuries. The statute here talks about disabilities. If the legislature wanted to say injuries and leave it at injuries, they could have done that. They did not do that.
Judge Fisher?
Yes, Mr. Christensen, my question related to your concern or your preference for consistency in the law, and as it relates to legislative intent, wouldn't it be more consistent as a matter of jurisprudence for the court to enforce what the legislature actually did based upon their text, as opposed to what collectively we may think what they collectively intended? Wouldn't that lead to a more consistent result?
It would lead to a more consistent result, but I still believe it leads to a constitutional infirmity, because in cases such as Mr. Witte here, you know, how has he got granted the equal protection of the Constitution? Where is the legitimate state interest in giving disability to someone with 40% of the low back, but not with someone with 40% with different parts of the body? How is that rationally related to a legitimate state interest? I've searched my brain and I can't come up with how that's rationally related to a legitimate state interest for that man. Now, in my case, you know what? Personally, I would do it this way. If I were deciding, I would say you can stack on extremities and you can stack on the body. But you can't stack extremities with the body. That actually hurts me in my case, because remember what I got in my case. I got 27.5 of the neck. I got 5% of the head. These are both bodies. And I got 5% of the left elbow. I think the elbow shouldn't have been thrown in there. That should be thrown out. Because I don't think you should be able to stack elbow with head and neck to body. I think that SHIP should be followed, and that we should allow stacking on extremities, major extremities, and stacking on the body. I think that's consistent with what disability is and how a person functions out there in the marketplace.
Do you think that that's consistent with the statutory language?
I think it is. If SHIP's consistent with the statutory language, then what I had just proposed is consistent with that language. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with the purpose of the second injury fund. And I don't disagree with Mr. Christensen. The purpose of the second injury fund, and Judge Teitelman pointed out, came about after World War II to encourage the hiring of veterans who were returning with disabilities. It's since been widely expanded. We have a lot more purposes now that we do, but we're talking about that today. With the changes that were made in 93, the purpose was to compensate people who have level or disabilities at a certain level.
What about Mr. Christensen's theory that it's okay to stack extremities, it's okay to stack body as a whole, but it's not okay to cross stack?
Is
that consistent with the statutory language?
I don't think it is.
Okay,
I still don't.
Why
it isn't, I think you have to go back to the strict construction argument that we talked about, and you have to look at the third sentence. If an employee who has a pre-existing permanent partial disability, is what it says. Mr. Christian said it talks about disabilities. It does in certain places, but when you're talking about this threshold, it's a single disability that it talks about
strict
that you've got to look.
Strict construction is not construed against the worker, though.
I agree.
It's just look at what the words say.
Look at what the word says. Any employee who has a pre-existing permanent partial disability, then it talks about the hindrance or obstacle, and the pre-existing permanent partial disability, it says a and the. My argument would be, why doesn't it say, if you want to do this, why doesn't it say any employee who has pre-existing permanent partial disabilities, whether from compensable injury or not, becomes an employee, and the pre-existing permanent partial disabilities, if a body as a whole equal 50 weeks or a major extremity equal 15, that's what you're wanting to do. You're wanting to read, you're taking out the A, taking out, not you, but that's what Mr. Christians wants to do. Take out the A, take out the T, and say E's, disabilities, instead of disability.
But it does say the basis of the combined disabilities.
That's because then you're looking at the pre-existing and the last. When you get down there, you're talking about two different things. You're talking about the pre-existing and the last. And I agree, you got two at that point. They're combining. That's what we're talking. That's the whole thing that we pay for.
But is his argument consistent with SHIP by saying that you can add all of the injuries to the body of the whole, just similarly as SHIP said,
you know,
can do it to a major extremity?
I don't think so, because you can, you know, Mr. Witte, I agree. Compelling case here. You got four disabilities at 10% each. Let's talk about the person who has 12 disabilities at one, or 13 disabilities at one. Are we going to do that too? I mean, if you do that, that's where you get.
You agree with SHIP where they act together and you see how they do on an extremity.
On an extremity, yeah.
They might combine, and you agreed that there may be body as a whole injuries, like multiple back injuries, which do.
But I don't believe that when you get to disparagent back body as a whole injuries, that you should be able to combine them, which is what I understand Mr. Christensen saying. All body as a whole, you would add. I don't agree with that. If you've got a 1% psych, a 1%
here. Don't we have head and neck? Aren't those pretty related?
I'm sorry?
Don't we have head and neck here?
It depends on how you look at the head. Concussion, brain injury versus neck, I don't know how related those are. And you're not just dealing with that. I mean, you're dealing with diabetes. You're dealing with a spastic colon. You can be dealing with a kidney. The things I've seen, morbid obesity, that's been alleged as a pre-existing. I don't think there's anything, any rationale in the statute for saying that you add disabilities together to figure out whether or not they meet the thresholds. The threshold, the purpose is not to pay everyone who's ever had any sort of disability. You know, Mr. Christensen reads from the guides to impairment. I don't have my guides to impairment. I have what I'm bringing with me. But the guides to impairment also tell you impairment is different than disability. Doctors are not even supposed to rate disabilities. They're supposed to rate impairment, because impairment has to do with the physical functioning changes that you have. You've had a certain surgery. You only have a certain range of motion. Disability is how it affects you in your daily life. You can have impairment and have no disability. So the fact that he reads and says impairment, you know, affects you, have to look at it as the whole body as a whole. Disability doesn't necessarily mean that, and it doesn't say that. It says impairment, which is different than disability. If you get a copy of it, you'll see it in there. You know, I just don't. The second injury fund purpose has limits, and we're seeing why we need limits at this point.
For example, is I'm legally blind, that's a disability, but I'm not impaired in my job, as you can see.
I can see that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. You know, the second injury fund has limits, and the legislature, through the amendments that went in 93, where they put in the statutory thresholds, I think, tried to limit it. I think the fact that they put struck construction in 05 also limits it. And the reason that we're limited is because we can't pay everyone. We're not the source of everything. And the purpose behind us is not to pay absolutely everyone who's ever had any sort of injury at all. It's to pay certain people who meet certain qualifications. The qualifications are set out in 220.1. Sentence 3 tells you whether or not you qualify. You have to have a disability of certain levels. Section 4, or sentence 4, excuse us, tells you how you calculate it once you figure out what qualifies. I believe, you know, Mr. Christensen said that the commission has not gone rogue. He pulled out the James Frank case. That's actually my case. I remember Mr. Frank, obviously. You know, I don't remember the facts on why we didn't appeal or what happened with adding the low back and the neck. But what I would tell you is what really the commission did here that's completely rogue, in my opinion, is this business of saying that the 15% only applies to or if you have only one major. That's nothing that's been done. And when you look at Steve Moore or George Moore and Steve Penrod, you'll see even months before the commission didn't follow their own logic. So thank you very much.
Thank you. The case will be taken under submission.